Hello there, traveler. It's another day as we begin the more perilous parts of the path as we begin to make our trek out of the Tavern Post Inn and finding our next stop on this wonderful journey. As I've been saying more and more recently, the intention behind this time and place, right, is to understand what this path is. Put a little bit more color into this rendering, right? As we try to understand some of the integral parts of this journey that we find ourselves on, leave the familiarity of the Tavern Post Inn and the comforts of laughter and weekly meditations, and start to get into the weeds a little bit here. Start to get a little bit deeper into the forest. Just taking again, as always, one step at a time. Brush becomes a little bit thicker. The calls of the animals starts to get a little bit more foreign. Not as familiar with those little Tweedledees and Tweedledums. But that's okay, we're still walking this path. It's still not unfamiliar. It's still a familiar path, right? It's still just one step at a time. But we can begin to take a moment, let our senses adjust, and really begin to look through between the trees. What is that you see? Is that a red shirt? Is that someone chuckling over there? Well, my God, we're not the only ones over here.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my God. Hey, Jared, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing, Tal?
Oh, you know, just going for another weird walk meditation through the forest and decided that it might have been another good enough time to take another step forward on this descent, on this journey. And luckily enough, you decided to appear and I think maybe help us and take us guide and really try to understand what some of these stories might be.
Agreed. Well, thank you, Tal, for walking with me along this path. Joining me for today's descent as we continue my religious deconstruction arc into part two now. And I do have to say that I think that parts one and two, my state, like my physical state, has accurately reflected where I've been at that point in time. So part one, I was feeling great. Everything's going good. And then now we're recording part two and I'm just getting over being under the weather. So obviously, still sound a little hoarse, but I feel like, you know, it's actually quite fitting for some of the darker turns that we're going to talk about on today's episode.
No, I think that's really fun. We try to always, you know, this time that we create here, we intentionally create it outside of time and space, right? So, yeah. You know, I think that we try to accidentally invite whatever quantum immortality, whatever hive mind overlord, right, to be able to give us these physical experiences. Mm-hmm. While we recant these tales and everything like that. Because we're all about believability in this lo-fi experience.
Oh, absolutely. let's create as much realism as we can. It's an art form, right?
It is an art form.
Yeah. Oh. So we're here. We're here. We're taking it back. We're throwing it back to Jared of, I guess, we're going to say transitioning into high school through into college and just talk about a lot of those transition points that we kind of touched on in the teaser during last episode about the Dark Storm.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's kind of what, you know, without going too far into QAnon and it, you know, with this Dark Storm, as we're calling it, right? This period of, let's say another word, unfamiliarity, right? This was a time period that you, without laying too much of the groundwork here for you, it is your story, but this is a time period where, for the first time in your life, your worldview, as I have understood it, really drastically changed.
Right.
In a sense where how the world actually itself works and what is possible in the world can change, right? That foundation, right, and everything like that. So, let's pull it back just a brief moment, real quick, and let's say what was right before the storm? Where was Jared and their family? What was going on? And then what happened?
It's something that For a lot of you who live in the United States and were alive and old enough to remember during this time, it probably would be a familiar and shared experience, but think back to like the time just before the economic recession.
Like, which one?
I'm talking about the big one.
The big, the great one. There we go. The great one.
The Great Recession. The Great Recession. Yeah. So we're talking about that. And pretty much, yeah, like right before that, everything, again, was going great. My family actually had plans to build a house, which we had not done in quite some time. We had been living in kind of a smaller property for most of my childhood growing up. It was my childhood home. And that's when things kind of, again, started to take a turn. We had these hopes and plans for the future. We're excited about this new house. We're ready to take that next step up, size up, have those plans for the future. Obviously, I was getting ready to go into high school, so that was an exciting time. Again, I didn't know what the horrors of high school were going to reveal themselves as, obviously, at that time. You're just naive. You're just excited about everything. And my parents, they had great careers as well. And again, that foundation of faith wasn't particularly challenged all that much to that point. Because again, even those like little questions I had in the back of my mind, I was able to suppress them or bury them, either because they weren't true existential threats to me yet. Like they were more like, okay, they could be, but right now things are going good. They're not really top of my mind right now. I'm willing to be ignorant. I'm willing to have this ignorance is bliss mentality and just kind of follow the herd with my Christian counterparts. But, you know, that started to change. That started to change when times really started to get tough and traumatic, as they did during the Great Recession. So
how did that actually, guys, impact you, right? We all know that from the history books, as they like to say, that, like, yeah, basically, financial industry, super predatory, a lot of bad investments mm-hmm. happened, a lot of things fell under. Yeah. Basically, this is a recession that was characterized and typically affecting the construction industry and blue-collar, typically male workers, right? That was what was really marked within this recession, right? Is one of the big differences between the COVID one that happened, right, was it was more of a service industry-based one, right? So this is knowing your family dynamic and everything like that, where your mm-hmm. parents are involved in their careers and everything like that. The construction industry is pretty important to how the West household was supplying their livelihood and everything like that. So this is a recession yeah. that truly impacted your guys' family demographic. Your guys' what the family demographic that was affected by this, right? That truly, when construction all but stopped in this country, right? That meant for both of your parents who had jobs within the development, right? You know, mm-hmm. work stopped for them too as well, right? So your family yeah. went through basically the booms of the dot-com bubble and all the and the industry that happened with that to this basically hard reset. So what yeah. was that like for little Jared?
Well, I will say at this point, I think I'm graduating from being little Jared, because yes. I was getting
just solid, old like, enough. Mid Jared.
Mid Jared. That's yeah, very fitting description for me at that age, mid Jared. But yeah, so basically at that age, I mean, I was just getting old enough where I could really understand what a lot of this stuff meant and what the implications were, right? So I watched as the house that we were building pretty much fell under us. That wasn't going to happen anymore. We didn't have the money to carry it out any longer. So that went away. And a lot of the new construction that was planned after that pretty much came to a screeching halt. I'm pretty sure that's not a surprise. There were literally communities that were half finished that they just said, fuck it. Like, we're not building anymore because, again, there just was no economic viability to do so. My parents' careers both completely vanished, all but overnight. It was very traumatic, and our house got foreclosed. So it was a very, very rough time. I got to watch one of our cars get repossessed. It just, and people ask me to this day, Tall, like, why are finances such a triggering topic for you? You know, like, who cares about credit card debt? Who cares about this and that? And it's like, it's triggering for me because I've seen the literal worst. I've seen the slippery slope of what can happen without having a backup plan, with having a poor financial situation. And my parents, I will never take away from them that they did everything that they could to take care of me and the family. But they just got really comfortable, obviously, with where they were and their successes. So when the Great Recession hit, there was no backup plan, right? It just, that's what there was. And when all that stuff fell through, our reality shifted drastically overnight. It went from, again, this kind of happy-go-lucky, things are going great, we could afford two nice cars, we could build a house that is more than double, or I would say probably double roughly what our current house was in value and all this stuff. And it's like, you go from that to like, oh, we're lucky to be at a house that's pretty comparable that we can't even own outright because our last house just got foreclosed. And again, downgrading in a lot of ways in our lifestyle, it just is very humbling, right? And I think it was actually a very good thing for me, Tal, because I think growing up, the arc that I presented in part one is absolutely true. I was very spoiled as a kid. I got everything I pretty much wanted. I wanted the latest toy, I got it. I wanted that new video game, I got it. I wanted something to play with and impress my friends. Chances are I got it. I got to take my friends on numerous vacations and all that stuff. And my parents would foot the bill. So it was like, I was spoiled. I was very spoiled in hindsight. And I think that the Great Recession, well, it was traumatic for a lot of people. And I'm really sorry for all the devastating impacts that it's had on people's careers and livelihoods. In the long term, I think for me as an individual, again, it was a very interesting time. It was a very weird time, but it was the great reset that I think I absolutely needed because it humbled me, man. It was something that I can't even tell you. It just, looking back on it, I think it really taught me the value of money. It taught me what it means to truly be humble. And when you get stripped down to the studs of your foundation, that's when you really start to understand, or you start to really get introspective and ask yourself, what is this foundation really made of? And I think that's where the roots of my challenges against Christianity really started to take a firm hold.
Now, tell me about that, actually, right? So you talked about this very traumatic situation, right? You talked about something that really sucks. You talked about basically your entire family going bankrupt. You talked about watching your house get foreclosed upon and your house and your car get repossessed. Mm-hmm. Actual traumas of like what it is to go through poverty, right? And to go from those mm-hmm. different places and come from a place that you are self-describing as spoiled and when in realistically was a place of definitely having. But was very in line with the generation at the time and everything like that. You know, normal even, right? You know, so you're going from this normal base to this base of, like you said, a great reset of how your perception and your reality is constructed, right? What was you alluded to how your parents dug down deeper into their faith, right? And this was a position for you too as well, while at the same time being this cognitive dissidence too. You know, talk about tell me about these different how did you rationalize these in these greater worldview senses of yours, like these losses, these things that you take away, these hard resets? Because, you know, ultimately, like as you said right now, these might be good things for you, and you can look mm-hmm. back at it positively and how this shaped you. That wasn't what Jared in the moment was feeling, I'm pretty sure.
No, really good question, Tal. And yeah, I did allude to at the end of the last episode that this trauma shaped my parents and myself in very distinct ways. But I think initially the three of us took a very similar path and a very similar journey. And again, you're talking about a Jared that was like just entering teenage years. I didn't know better. I still trusted my parents. What my parents did, I wanted to follow that example. So when we were going through this trauma, it felt like us versus the world. It didn't feel like, hey, maybe I should question my parents in their decisions that they made or society and how we operate. Maybe it's just, hey, we're being the victim here and we're going to turn to whatever power we need to get what we feel like we deserve. And it seemed like at this point, religion seemed to be an answer, at least more formalized religion. And it was something that I followed, at least for the first few steps, again, along this path, until I started to kind of see it differently. I mean, basically, how that started is it was a relatively quick transition, I would say, once things really started to hit the fan, if you will, when my parents lost their jobs and car gets repossessed and house gets foreclosed and these things keep piling on. Again, as a kid who's entering high school, you're observing these things, but you're not being directly involved in every conversation, right? Because your parents are trying to shield you. They're trying to protect you. And obviously I know all the details after the fact, but that was all done in hindsight, right? Like in the moment, I'm kind of just hearing these rumblings, and then as things start to get more serious, then my parents start to approach me about these things. And you have that emotional breakdown, that vulnerability. But what was even more striking to me, rather than just those point blank conversations or those, you know, arguments over finances I'd hear, is just I would start to notice, like my mom specifically, like I would hear her in the closet praying and like crying on the floor in her closet. And before you know it, I start to see her like wanting to put up more crosses around the house and praying to God and like just going to this place where she has basically removed herself from our reality, praying to God in her own bubble. And what was particularly interesting is that, well, my parents always had faith in God. It was never like this. It was never like I'd never seen my parents dropping to their knees in tears, praying to God. Like I'd never seen that. And it what was really interesting about it and scary is that it's almost like seeing fear in your parents' eyes for the first time.
What was that like? Like to you go back to that moment, right, of being like, oh, my parents aren't like secure.
Yeah, it was terrifying.
And and you're taking that change, right? You're seeing your mom adapt right into this, you know, something that is different for you, right? I'm not trying to put any kind of good or bad label on, yeah, you know, reverting back to prayer in traumatic times, but that, like you said, no, that's scary, right? That is a, yeah, a very abrupt change into your family's dynamics, relationship with God, right? And yeah, how you guys perceive the divine. That's a pretty intense change, right? And again, not trying to put, yeah, subjective good or bad or anything like that on it, but that's a jarring worldview difference of what is this place of what you were associating as casual benevolency, right? With how, mm-hmm, you guys described your relationship, right, with God, essentially, right? Into this one where you're like, oh, this is a fear-based response now, and my, mm-hmm, mom isn't okay, and that's crazy, dude. You know, that's a pretty insane transition.
Yeah, what's insane about it is a lot of the times I would catch my mom doing this, especially the first time, like, I did it in such a way that she didn't know about it. Like I would kind of creep up into the room and sneak around the corner and see her just in shambles on the closet floor. But she was so enveloped in that moment, in that prayer and in the tears and the negative emotions, she didn't even notice that I was there. Maybe a couple times she did later on and I kind of let her embrace me, but a few times I just wanted to observe. I just wanted to watch and just study and observe and learn and see how my dad handled it very differently. My dad obviously was just very, you know, absent to it. He wanted to not really pay too much attention to it because it would bring him a lot of pain. And my mom would just turn to God. My dad would do it more indirectly. My mom would do it very directly through prayer. My dad wouldn't break down like that, but he would just kind of, I guess, zone out, right? But just to see that firsthand was very traumatic because, again, here I am entering high school, the most pivotal years of my, like, pre-adulthood life. And I'm like, oh, wow, my parents really don't have it all figured out like I thought my entire life. They don't have a plan to get us out of this. They're praying to a God to get us out of this. They're completely leaning into faith, which is the absence of action and logic, in the sense that you're putting it all out there on another entity, another being. You have no clue yourself. You don't have any ideas. You're throwing up that Hail Mary. It's 2 seconds left in the game. You're throwing it up to the end zone, and God, just hoping someone catches it. Someone brings down that ball and scores. But it was scary, dog. It was really scary because I didn't know how to feel. I remember I would go back to my room myself, and I didn't cry. I didn't have tears. I would just kind of, I guess I had more of my dad's response, but just more kind of like staring out of space, like, oh shit, what's going to happen? Like, I had a genuine fear of the future for the first time. I didn't know where we were going to be living next, Saul. I didn't know where I was going to be going to school. I didn't know if I was going to be going to school where you're going to school.
Yeah.
I didn't know if that was going to happen. I didn't know what the future was going to hold. It was very, very scary. And, you know, when people ask me, I always say it was like one of the most traumatic periods of my life. And it was for a reason. I kind of have more of a mental deconstruction as we continue to talk about this that I can't wait to get into. But it's just, that was the foundation of this. And this is when the original foundation of faith really started to crack and crumble under this profound pressure that society was placing on our family. And again, they say pressure can make diamonds, but it can also crush people. So I've seen both sides of it kind of work our family in different ways.
No, and I think that you talk about how you kind of internalized it in this almost voiding out, right? Zoning out, I think is the exact wording you used, right? So you start to experience, like, your mom is going through is experiencing this in a pretty profound and pretty direct way, right? You know, and going through their expression of that. And that's instead of being a point for your family to kind of coalesce over, right? You know, and have some kind of unify, you guys really almost all had your own individual breakdowns of experiences, right, on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at least in your case, it really led to your ultimately, you know, like you said, that first crack in kind of how you were perceiving these worldviews, right? And I think you touched on something that I really want to really hear you expand upon real quick, actually. I'd really like to know, he talks about having these experiences, right, in seeing your mom have a pretty fanatical experience in a pretty intense, robust way. And you see your dad having this way that you personally resonate with you more, but in zoning out, right? You talked about the transition of what God essentially and religion played in your family's life. That it went from being this kind of all-encompassing, just, oh yeah, we're Christians, but like we believe in Jesus and kind of more of this abstract teaching kind of evangelical way to
this blanket of protection.
This direct thing that you are now calling on as a resource to exemplify and to, like you said, to put in your answers when you don't have answers, right? So you've now seen this transition in how religion is an answer to life, or or as a kind of a not an answer to life, but a mode of going about things.
Precisely.
I'd really like to hear like what this transition really started to be. Like you said, it started being kind of a little bit of cognitive dissonance for you, and it ultimately leads to being a lot of one of those cracks that breaks the damn wall for you and everything like that. But talk about that experience and like transitioning, like what the divine played in your modality.
Yeah, I guess you could say in a way that during this time, my family was kind of going through the 5 stages of grief, you know, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. And it just, we all kind of went through in our own different ways at different paces, but how we reached the point of accepting our reality came through very different means. And as I talked about, my mom's was through prayer, my dad was through just not choosing to think about it, not dealing with it. And for me, it was just compartmentalizing it in my mind. And I think you touched on a really good point too. It's like the God that we believed in, the God that I grew up with, was this all-protecting, protective, formative God. God created the universe. God puts a blanket of protection over us and our family. We're under his watchful eye, but we can carry out our lives as our own independent agents. Now it's like this resourceful God that we literally like have to pray to get out of this hole, to get out of this bad situation. So it did start to stir up some cognitive dissonance, if you will, because I was, again, seeing the idea of God change, right? It was something that it kind of just makes you go like, well, we didn't pray before. Why are like this? Like, why are we needing to pray like this now? Like why is it just happening now? Why is the idea of God changing? Why do we now need to put crosses up? And there's more changes that happened that made me question why. Like, as my parents started to get more, as they started to become more devout Christians, my dad started to kind of turn this way as well. I noticed that my parents were picking up copies of the Bible. They were starting to read the Bible more. Which, by the way, they had never really done this, or at least I'd never observed them do this my whole childhood. They started to read the Bible. They started to watch church service every Sunday morning. And I'd wake up Sunday morning, go downstairs to have breakfast with my parents, and they would put on Joel Osteen or Joyce Meyer or some other kind of pastor over the TV. So, you know, all that. And just seeing all this stuff, and I was kind of weirded out by it at first, because I'm like, we had never done this. Like, it's like, now that the rubber's meeting the road, now all of a sudden, it's important to do these things. I remember asking those questions, Tal, like, why are we watching church service now? Why are you reading the Bible? And being told, like, oh, reading the Bible is good. Like, this is what it means to be a good Christian, to, like, be a part of a church and listen to his word and his gospel. And in another big shift in my reality is my mom, which she had, again, never had done before, almost exclusively overnight started listening to Christian music. Like, that became her thing. She would have songs that when they would come on in the car, she would start to break down and cry. Like, almost immediately. And she connected to it so deeply, so passionately. But again, these shifts all happened very quickly, Tal. It was very, very quick. And again, just being all of a sudden just bombarded with Christian music and Christian media and Christian books, like, it was a lot at once to take in. And I didn't even know how to really process it all. But I was just like, again, like, okay, this stuff has existed my whole life. I didn't know about it because obviously we are very much non-denominational, not serious Christians. We had that foundation of faith, but we weren't like religious zealots or anything. We weren't Bible thumpers. But now all of a sudden, we're injecting so much Christianity in our lives that I almost felt like our whole life was to appease God now. It felt like religion was literally more than the foundation of our house. It was the walls. It was the roof. It was everything. Religion and Christianity was now embedded in everything that we did. Everything was to please God so that we could receive his blessing. It felt like at this time, too, my mom and my dad started to get a lot more strict on me about the things that I said or the way that I carried myself, because again, we're trying to live up to this Christian image, right? So it's like, you can't say God's name in vain anymore, even though my parents always said, you know, stuff like that before. It was just, again, you see my point here, right? It was a quick change overnight, seemingly, in just such a short amount of time, where all the beliefs and the worldview I grew up with was evolving in a response directly to this trauma. And I was smart enough to know that it was in response to trauma. That's why I didn't fall headfirst into this. I was kind of wading in the waters with them. But this whole time, like, I in the back of my mind, I'm like, this is just wild. Like, I was like, look, I know that you both need to cope, obviously, and it's a very tough situation, but is really diving headfirst into this religion the right answer? I didn't know. I wasn't quite sure about it, but I guess at some point I begrudgingly decided that I need to give it a try after I went through my own mental turmoil and struggles in high school not too long after that. You see, it not just because of the financial crisis, but also because of other factors. Between my freshman year and sophomore year of high school, I really fell out with my existing friend circle at the time, a group of friends that I had for many years from pretty much early middle school all the way up through freshman year. And it was kind of on my own volition. And I will just say that this is a little bit of an aside here, but I think it's relevant to the rest of the conversation here. Our interest didn't align anymore, just to give the whole TLDR on it. And I just felt like I needed to go in a different direction. And leaving a friend group is really hard. It's really hard to do. I'm pretty sure a lot of people could relate to this. And I went through a period where, again, that summer I was very lonely. I felt like I had no friends, nobody to connect to. We had just been a year removed from this devastating financial crisis. And I remember just having these intrusive thoughts kicking in, these overthinking patterns that would persist. And I would just continually have these mental breakdowns, mental breakdown after mental breakdown, episodes where I'd be just crying myself, honestly. In hindsight, it seemed like even the littlest things could set me off, Tall. And then I turned to therapy, and therapy helped somewhat during that time. But what my parents had really convinced me was going to help me more than anything was turning to God. And of course, when you're in a vulnerable, weak state of mind, you start to say, okay, I'm only a sophomore in high school, right? Like, what other tools do I really have at my disposal? Let's just see what this whole God thing is all about. Let me try to lean into this a little bit more. And that's when my parents and I first started to take the steps towards more organized religion and attending church service on Sundays.
That's a lot. It's a lot that happened in a very quick time period, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you touched on some really, really important transitions into some of the factors that ultimately led you to what's the proper way of saying it, right? Accepting Jesus Christ into your heart into a different way, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you would have described at that time, right? And you talked about someone who went through a lot of internal conflict at a young age into being able to accept that decision, actually. And I think that is something that's really interesting to highlight. And worth kind of exploring, right? This isn't someone who just when good was able to accept it, right? You're very actively talking about how this was weird to you. This was uncomfortable to you. This increase in religiosity was not something you were readily accepting into your heart, right? And something you were interested in. But because of some pretty other important factors, right, that went on, it was something that did find its ultimate appeal, right? Talk to me about that, right? Talk to me about those decisions. I know you talked quite a bit about it already, but let's get a little bit more into the weeds about like that actual pathway into acceptance right there, right?
Yeah, let's get more cognitive and let's get more dissonant here. But yeah, so, I mean, in hindsight, Tal, I think it's very clear. It's abundantly clear that there is a common denominator between my parents and myself in us turning to Jesus Christ. Shared trauma. Trauma in very different ways. My mom went through trauma of losing her status as the breadwinner, taking care of the household. Obviously, my parents both lost the house, lost the car. My dad lost his career. He started to turn to other ambitions. And obviously, even though this whole situation affected my mom more than my dad because she was more the keeper of the finances, my dad had a burden of seeing his wife go through that. So their trauma was laid out. I obviously wasn't as affected by that. My lifestyle was. But like I had mentioned before, I was able to cope with it somewhat. And, you know, like I just, but it wasn't enough for me, right? Like I wasn't truly going through enough trauma, I feel like, to break me down to that point. I had my doubts. And then again, of course, it took personal trauma of my own going through that, I guess, rebirth in high school, if you will, that really forced me to consider this new path, because I had just went through such a drastic change of my own. Because again, they don't tell you how hard it is in high school of all places to try and reinvent yourself, right? To try to reassociate yourself with new people and to branch out and have a new identity. And again, when I say that I left that old friend circle, it wasn't because I thought they were bad people. I thought they were lovely human beings. I just was not invested in that type of dynamic anymore. We didn't have shared interests. You know, we were kind of going on our own different paths, and it was very clear that I had to make a change. But then, again, by ripping off that Band-Aid, it pretty much plummeted me down into this deep well of a descent where I felt like I was trapped literally metaphysically at the bottom of a well. It really felt like that. And I was crying for help. I really didn't have a lot of resources. I didn't have any best friends at that time to really turn to, because, I mean, just to put it lightly, outside of the friend group that I just left, like, one of my longest tenured friends at that point got in a band and started to get into, he started to go on to his own descent where he was dealing with addiction. And, you know, at that time, like, I didn't know if I was going to, like, be friends with him anymore, because we just were, again, we're going in our own paths, right? So I didn't have anybody. I didn't have anybody at that time. It was very rough. It was obviously before we became friends. My friendships I had with some people I still are friends with now were just starting to coalesce. So I really didn't have the history with them yet. So I had nobody to turn to. And again, Jesus Christ, it was like this beacon of light. Like maybe Jesus is the answer. It just felt so tongue in cheek, but you know, I was willing to give it a shot. So I started to go to church with my parents on Sunday, and we had a Bible and listening to the pastor and all that stuff. And I'll say this. What the pastors at some of these Christian churches have to say, at least like local churches, not the ones that get televised on TV, like they can be really good messages for you to hear. And I think it's done that way intentionally, right? Like, they're not going to try to make you feel like a piece of shit. They're not going to try to make you feel like a piece of shit. It doesn't matter what you've done. It's the whole reason why the Christian God is this all-forgiving God, right? Because they want to sell you on this idea that you could be the biggest sack of shit and still come in here on Sunday, give us your buck, and we'll make you feel like a better person. And I'm saying that they obviously want to appeal to the masses. And yes, maybe there is a component where people involved in religion are trying to genuinely help people become better human beings, but you also have to admit that there's an element where they're just trying to get as many butts in seats as possible, right? They want to have that mass appeal. If they say that, yeah, God's not going to accept you if you've done these things, then they're already alienating a lot of their potential population. So But yeah, I mean, going into church, again, you hear these sermons, and they're very powerful sermons. And what I do like about some of them is that they do try to relate them to real life examples, right? Like, they'll take like an excerpt from the Bible and say, like, this is a real life example now. Here's what it means to be a good person, to give back to your community, to help out, to make a difference. And that is a part of a message that I did resonate with. I could, to be honest, even at this stage, I could care less about what the scripture said. I don't think I've ever, at any point in my journey with Christianity, have I ever connected with the Bible. It's always been a book of stories to me. I've never believed in any of it. I've taken it as like anecdotal tales that have maybe been extrapolated in one way or another to kind of make this nice, cohesive story. I don't really put too much stake into it. I don't think that these are events that personally actually happen. I think that they're just... It seems a lot like how I'm interpreting these sermons. It's like taking real life examples and in these themes, these messages about what it means to be a true Christian, and just embedding that in some kind of fanciful account. So that seems to be what that kind of meant to me. But even at this stage of my life, again, going through my own mini depression, it was still good to hear. It was cleansing, because I'm like, damn, like, even though I don't believe in the actual stories of the Bible, like, I believe in what they're selling me in terms of what it means to have a positive outlook on life and to keep your head up and just being enveloped in this environment of positivity, even though, again, it was in such a weird framework, right? Because I'm not a churchgoer. I'm not that type of person. But again, the message was positive. So that was a point for Christianity, right? It was something that was kind of keeping me in my head above water. But again, there were other aspects of the Christian experience that did turn me off a lot, at least the more formalized approach. And no, it wasn't necessarily having set times that you have to go to church on a Sunday and all this and that. But I mean, I think you look at it as like just all the little transactions that surround religion, I think, is what really was alarming to me. Like, just the fact that there is a lot of pressure when you're involved with the church to give to the church, right? There's that very subconscious pressure as they pass around the bowl to put money in. And you feel like a sap if you're not putting anything in that bowl. But maybe you just want to listen to a good message. Maybe you truly don't have any money to give, right? But there kind of is that pressure to give. And of course, every sermon is preceded by worship. And worship is basically singing these Christian rock songs that I also hear on the radio with local community members who are leading the way. And again, it just felt more of the same, Tal. I'm like, I hear these songs on the radio. I don't really connect with them. Like, I tried to, but I just don't like Christian music. let me just put it bluntly. I'm not, like, there are songs that are by bands that say that they are Christian that I like, but I like them because they're not specifically Christian music. I feel like a lot of these songs that I didn't like were made specifically for Christians based on Christian beliefs in the Bible, and they always felt very cheeky to me. I didn't resonate with them. So during worship, obviously, just kind of stand up there, clap, whatever. But it was a little awkward, obviously. I'm like, can we just get to the message part? That's honestly what I would just think about. But of course, here's teenage Jared just looking over to his side and seeing, you know, my dad kind of standing there doing much the same. And then my mom is like singing all the songs, every single one, tears streaming down her face. You know, I think back to that period of my life. I think of a song that I know very well that I love a lot because I'm a huge Coldplay fan, but Fix You. I think that Fix You is a really good song that pretty much encapsulates that whole transition point in my life. And just, like, seeing the light on the other side, on both sides, really, through the Stark Tunnel. But what it took to get through it, it was so much. It took so much mental fortitude. It was hardly anything physical. It was so mental just to adapt to this new lifestyle and even trying church. You know, trying church for the first time and going every Sunday. It was such a life shift. And, you know, like I said, I think that I did start to heal a little bit by going on this journey with my parents, because I did hear some positive messages that really boosted my mental health. But at the same time, I think there was a sense to all where I felt growth in this experience because I had a shared experience with my parents. I think that that was something that did heal us a lot. And that's one reason why I think, even though I completely reject organized religion for myself today, I think at the time, it was a key transition point for our family to get on the journey of healing, for us to have some kind of a shared experience, because you touched on earlier in the episode, when we're going through our own traumas, we were never on the same page. We had felt like fragmented pieces of a puzzle since the Great Recession hit. So it finally felt like an opportunity for us to come together, to bond, to heal. And that pretty much all culminated with me actually electing to be baptized by my local church.
That's taking Jesus Christ into your heart, if I've ever heard it right there, right? Mm-hmm. I think intentionally choosing a baptism in your late teenage years. It's making a conscious choice, right? And certainly. I think you touched on some really interesting elements that led you to that conscious choice that I think are really worth calling out here. You did not connect with the Bible itself, actually, which is really interesting. Didn't take it any more than allegorical story, as I believe the wording you used.
Correct.
You did not connect with, honestly, the mystic of the divine. You weren't in there for a fanatical experience like you might see within Pentecostal or some of the more charismatic faiths, right? You were turned off by worship music even to that point, right? Worship music even was just like, that's not my vibe right there.
Nope.
Maybe from a little bit more of a critical music perspective, but still, so you weren't into it, right?
Possibly from a very critical music perspective. Yeah. I think that's a very safe statement.
And even in the tradition, you did not connect with the tradition. You didn't like the alms. You didn't like these little practices and stuff like that. There's a lot of actual things here that you just did not connect with. But there are two really important elements that I hear you connecting with, right? Community, the shared experience with your family, and these other people that you went there with and actually being able to connect with, right? So God to you, it sounds like, at this time was a very... communal force. Mm-hmm. It was a human factor, right, in that regard. Yeah. Right, where it was literally this bringing humans together force, right, and mm-hmm. a way to connect with people. And messaging, you were very much looking for answers. You were very much looking for understanding, whether it was that meditation, like you said, a sermon of the week just to think about, right? Mm-hmm. Just to connect with, right, and stuff like that. So you're very intrinsically looking for, like you said, seeking answers, right? Yep. I think those, you know, are two very things that are very reflective, I think, of anyone that should be going through their teenage years, right? Of, what is this? Who are my people? Who are my tribe? What is my community, right? And what is life? What are these things? What are these things, right? That. So I think that you found God and you ultimately chose to accept Jesus Christ into your heart mm-hmm. through baptism because of these two very, very intrinsic motivations, right?
Yeah.
That you were able to experience the divine through, which is actually, which I want to highlight, was a minority of what you just described to me. You just described to me much more experiences of disconnect, of that cognitive dissonance, right? Of things that you did not like about in the church. Mm-hmm. You did not connect with Christianity. And in fact, were pretty off-putting to you. Mm-hmm. Like, extra to the point of, like, uncomfortability. That made matrilineal figure at times mm-hmm. too, right? And you even still experienced that uncomforting, and still were able to be like, no, this community supersedes that.
Yeah,
like, this supersedes that disconnection and this discomfort that I'm experiencing in all these other ways that really are screaming a lot at you and are, again, it seems like the majority of your experience right there, because that's what you just spend the most time of what you were talking about right there. Mm-hmm. But these other two things, you could just hear yourself talking about it, right? The meaning in that, what community and trying to find answers meant to both you and your family at this time, right?
Yeah.
And ultimately, it really seems like such a powerful, I don't know if that's the right word I want to use, such a motivation into your descent at this time, right? Into how you were constructing your worldview. The two most important things were you were community and answers, and that at this time period, Jesus Christ was those answers for you.
Great summation, as always.
Well, I know we're up against a hard end here, right? That, so I wanted to really make sure we got to that moment right there and really encapsulated this experience here for you, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of motivation that goes into taking these decisions, and it's not any one decision. And I think that's really what I wanted to highlight here, right, is that this journey is as personal as your story, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just as mine is as personal to my story, right? It's those little motivations and those little things that end up making the big decisions, right? And to really actually deconstruct and understand those motivations, right, it takes effort. So I want to take a moment to acknowledge the space that we've created here and take a moment to say thank you for your vulnerability, your honesty, and your taking your effort just to honestly experience what that time period was for you. Obviously, it's not completely accurate because as anyone where our Warstone story, memory recallers and everything like that, but this is the point of the descent, right, is to understand what these things mean to us at this time and place, right, wherever that might be for you, myself, mm-hmm. and the traveler listening.
Yep, your own.
So thank you, Jared. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tal. And if I may, I could leave us off with a little bit of a transition point. On top of the transition point that we discussed within this episode. But yeah, just to reiterate what you stated, I did feel a sense of community at the church. I felt like we had friends there. We connected with the pastor. We liked the pastor. We made friends at the church. Like, everybody was just so friendly. Everybody was nice. It felt like a shared space. And it felt like a safe space, most importantly. And I was seeking answers. I most certainly would go to church and hope that I'd hear something that was going to lift my spirits to make me feel better about my reality and how maybe I could navigate my own path to get to a better place to where I felt like I wanted to be. Because I never believed in miracles. I never did. I still don't. Not in the sense where it supersedes natural physical causes. I'm not one that, I mean, you've known Tal as long as we've known each other. I'm not really one for the supernatural. If I see it, I'll believe it. But again, there's a lot of people in the Christian faith that they believe that God's power can be supernatural. But again, I always struggled with the concept that you never see it in action. You never actually see him parting the sea. You never see him, like, regrowing limbs. You never see him, like, doing these supernatural things, like flooding an entire land, right? Like, things that are accounted for in these tales of the Bible or maybe by word of mouth, but you never actually see it. So that part I can never connect with because it was never concrete enough for me. And I think that cognitive dissonance right there is going to be why in the last part of this deconstruction, why I reconnected with science and why I leaned fully into the scientific method and ended up ultimately rejecting Christianity because science was my first true love. And I went back to it because there were ultimately answers that I could not get out of Christianity. My mind looks at the world in a very physical sense. And if I can't get answers from this worldview on how the world actually fucking works, then it's garbage to me, at least in that way. It has no explanatory power in that way. But again, what I will give points to Christianity for is how it helped reinvigorate my confidence, how it helped reconnect me to my community, and how it gave me a really good and humble perspective of what it means to be a good person. You know, it strip away all that other BS that didn't matter to me. I think ultimately getting baptized, just while my parents will say to this day, like, you chose to get baptized. I'm like, yes, I did. And you want to know why I chose to get baptized? Because it was a shared experience. My parents were doing it. I didn't want them to feel like they're going off alone. I wanted to have a shared moment in time to commemorate our journey together. And when the water was washed over me and my head went under in that pool, I did feel a little something, and not in like a supernatural sense, not like the Holy Spirit was entering me or anything like that, but it just felt like a demarcation in time. It felt like a metaphysical weight was lifted off my shoulders, that we had climbed this mountain of formal religion, of Christianity, and we'd made it here. You know, we'd made it here. It felt like we had achieved something together. And it was quite powerful for us, because at this point, I was later in my high school years. I was close to graduation. We had landed on our feet, new house, pretty much the same as the old house, just newer. It just really didn't have a lot of standout features or anything. But again, we land on our feet with the help of family. And my parents were making it work with their careers. We were staying on our feet. You know, life tried to knock us down many times, but we kept going. We kept throwing the punches. We had many punches thrown at us, but we kept throwing them right back. And I'm proud to say that we climbed that mountain together. And I'm always grateful for that experience at church. I'm always grateful for the baptism and the sermons that I got to listen with my parents, because again, at that moment in time, it's what I needed to hear. It's the healing journey that I needed to cultivate that shared experience and to just feel cleansed of all that dirty water that those tumultuous years had left me with. So it almost felt like going through a water filter, right? Like you have all this dirty ass murky water with a bunch of rocks and minerals in it, and then you filter it out, this nice clean pure water comes out crystal clear on the other side. So it was a magical experience, not in a supernatural sense, but just in a very euphoric sense. I'll always be grateful for that. But what I am looking forward to, Tal, is again talking about how my transition into college and beyond, my post-formative years, started to really turn me away from organized religion and seeking more answers of the unknowns in the universe and the curiosities that I still had that were never answered in my life to science, and why I looked there for more of these answers, and why that ultimately and permanently changed my worldview for good.
Thank you for your time, your effort, your space, your honesty. Thank you, Traveler, for taking the time, the space, and the energy to be here on us on this descent. Jared, you have gone through many iterations. I continue to be impressed and continue to get excited to know the different iterations to come.
Thank you.
Anyone who's willing to take the time and space to understand why they were there and how they are here, I think it is a worthy conversation to have. Just, I think that you are a worthy person to listen to. Thank you, Traveler. As always, you are more than worth it. You are enough.